fiction. This is episode 42. Wonderful. We are the podcast that every week picks apart pop culture and media that we like. No take backs. I'm your host, Nico, and I'm joined here every week by my co-host, Tyler.
Hello.
And we have a lot of fun, cool stuff to talk about this week. And the first of that being, we both got to play a video game recently called Forager.
We did. Oh, it's a video game.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people haven't actually. We haven't talked about video games in a hot minute.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of people still don't really even know what Forager is, because it, even though it feels like it was popular a bit, it seems like a lot of people just haven't heard of it, I guess.
Yeah, which is funny because, like, I feel like it would be a game that would be like one of those indie games that a bunch of like big streamers get into to stream,
which
or whatever.
Did not happen.
Didn't happen because, yeah. And it's weird because it's got that kind of like chill atmosphere, but also grindy, but also like if you're the kind of like streamer that also like occasionally dabbles in Minecraft or Stardew, it definitely feels like something that they would pick up for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised. I'm really surprised.
I'm trying to think. There might have been other releases at the time that hurt that too. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. But it's a. I would say it's kind of a.
It's sort of like an action adventure farming game, resource gathering game.
Resource gathering game that has like light RPG-ish elements to it, more less about like role in terms of like having a class or whatever, and more that it gives you a lot of opportunities to kind of like customize the kind of resource gathering experience that you want. But Tyler, I know you wrote about the game a little bit. It feels like half of the game that we actually want, and like the other half is weird.
Yeah,
a little bit,
because it's like a top-down game where you like are playing on a bunch of islands, and it's a little bit more. It's definitely more fast-paced than like Stardew Valley, which is another popular farming game. Yeah, so it's like you're not. I mean, there is day and night cycles or whatever, but. The game sort of moves at a pace. Yeah, you never have to stop, which is the whole thing.
Which is bad.
So, yeah, so like you, and so the whole, the like, the loop of the game is like, you know, cutting down trees, building stuff, and then like leveling up, and then filling out a talent tree of like different ability or like different like buildings you can build and stuff like that and upgrades. And then you eventually sort of like start buying islands to expand. And then the new islands sort of either give you like, little puzzle like dungeons, like almost like a Zelda dungeon to go through with enemies and puzzles, and or like new resources to gather, like I don't know, skeletons or something to get bones. But a lot of the game is like, I don't know, a lot of the game is like just like, you know, just clearing out the islands to get more resources to fuel your different machines, to build other machines, to like, you know, keep expanding and to start like just like getting, using every single piece of the land to just in, to either get more experience, more gold, or like to level up your items, to get better swords, stuff like that. But it even goes so far as to like, you start like you start like getting oil, like you start like what's the word, it's not mining for oil, it's like drilling for oil.
Drilling.
That's it.
Drilling. Yeah.
There's like an oil driller, and you need oil to start building stuff like drones, which are like not literal like drones in, you know, our life, but like actual like these little robots that like follow you around, or like they're more like, they're not, they don't look like robots, but they're essentially robots that follow you around and kill like mobs with you so you don't have to do it. A lot of it is about like automation, so you don't have to do stuff yourself. But it requires so just like destroying the entire land, and like just, and even to the point of like putting a mining rod down that will just clear out continuously a section of land over and over, and then just, and then like that's the thing too, is like when you're doing all this, your inventory is just full of like, I'm running around with, I don't know, 1500 pieces of coal, like you just are just, you just have bags and bags of resources, and you just
and
use
money.
It to keep doing, and money, yeah, to just
and
keep
money,
doing it.
The idea of like the automation and the efficiency sort of level to it is what kind of took me out of the enjoyment of it really fast, because the everything, every resource randomly respawns every, like, it never stops respawning.
It never stops.
It never does. It never stops.
You can't clear out a nice little patch and then just leave it alone. It will keep, you will often run into trees that popped back up on your way to some other island to get something. You need to always be like breaking stuff down.
And the idea with the automation and the efficiencies is kind of this idea of, well, these bigger and bigger plots of land that you acquire, the resources that constantly refresh, will just be eventually fed into the maw of the machine that you are sort of working towards. And it gets very industrialized very quickly in terms of like building things that are machines and robots and things like that. Versus like
plastic, you make plastic.
Yeah, plastic. Versus like Stardew Valley, which is my funny little like vaguely anti-capitalist farming simulator, which is just like more about like building the community and being friends with people.
Yeah, there's no other. Well, there's other characters in this game, but they're all quest givers. They're all means.
They're all
to
quest
an end.
Givers and just kind of like non-essential NPCs. It's really funny to me how. It's got this kind of really cutesy aesthetic, but the politics of it were so present to me, so present and in my face, that like I really felt like I really got what most people are talking about in more like vague terms with other games. So a big school of thought slash conversation in games a lot of times is, you know, especially recently, is a lot of like indigenous writers talking about how so much of gaming specifically builds loops and structures in games that just center on land acquisition, resource management, and those are just ideas that are so hardcore baked into so many different games. Even if
leveling
they don't
up.
Have, yeah, even if yeah. they don't have any other like trappings of like the what that really means, except this game absolutely, I think pretty unintentionally goes right to that. Just
yeah, it starts out kind of cutesy like Stardew, right? Because even you started and were like, oh, I like this game. It's neat, it's cute.
It's a little hectic because I don't like the spawns, but like it goes to these places without any consequences whatsoever.
It's like it misinterpreted Minecraft and Stardew. Like it's like a bad. It's like a. It's kind of like a bad. What is the word I'm looking for?
Homage?
No. Well, I guess homage would work. I was thinking like it's almost like a bad. Gosh, what is why? The only thing I can think of is Game of Thrones, the TV show, is this of a book.
Adaptation.
Word. Yeah, it's like a bad adaptation. Because it just feels like, oh, wait, you really like the cute art of like Stardew, but you still love video games where you level up and get stronger and just pillage the land. And like, you know, and that's what it feels like. And it, because it even has like that sort of like, you know, pixely style and their swords, sort of like Terraria. It definitely feels like Terraria in some ways too. I never really played a lot of Terraria, but I think Terraria is
like,
similar.
Like they definitely has like a DNA and a pedigree like Minecraft, but then it's like the person who made this decided that what those games were really missing was the really intense drive towards resource management, which is so funny to me. Not surprising, but not funny in kind of a dark way, because like there are a lot of people in video games obviously who are making games who think that those things are cool and aren't gonna sit there and really grapple with the fact that constant resources don't just happen. They do not happen instantaneously. There are drawbacks, as we contend with every day, with like global climate change as we know it, and resource, you know, like
you eventually get an ability to like break apart the land too and then build land. I know that. So I don't have that, but I know you can.
So it's like, it's really interesting that somebody made this game in like last year or this year without ever contending with those like lines of conversation.
Yeah.
And without remarking upon it. But that's, again, not surprising to me because it's
a lot of video games do that.
They do that. Yeah. And they really don't. They want to have that kind of like loop without contending with consequences or really kind of talking about it or what it mirrors of just like, you know, you can't just come into a place and just settle down on top of it and just say, well, all this shit's mine now and I'm gonna just take it until it stops giving and just make $1 million off of it. And but that's been the way of Western history for the last
I mean, it's inherent in the design that the it's inherent in the design that the land never stops giving, like the trees never run out.
The trees never run out. The rocks always come.
Yeah, that realistic like thing is non-existent in this game. It's there for you.
It's a very cute capitalism and imperialism, colonialism simulator, basically.
Yeah, it's like, really funny that like there's coins in this game to buy land. I don't know who you're giving the coins to.
Who are you giving the coin? And you get the coins from like a bank. Or selling
stuff to a market.
So there's an economy, but there's no other person but you. It's very self-absorbed, and you are the center of the universe in a way that I have not felt in a game before, which is hysterical.
Like, it feels like a lot of games to me in that idea that like everything like revolves around you, because it feels like the sort of like, I don't know, it reminds me of our conversation we always have that we always want to talk about on the podcast, which I don't think we have time to get into, but it's that thing of like the like weird Skinner box attitude of like you are not going to be entertained unless everything is for you and everything is constantly popping up. And so this is weird because like we talk about how we like Diablo 3's design where it feels really like catered to like making you excited every moment to give you loot, even if it's not interesting. It's still like the way the animations are for it popping out of enemies and stuff like that, and the time in between getting certain values of loot, like legendaries and stuff like that. But obviously the context is completely different. So when you put it in a game that is about like, you know, farming and stuff and like it just becomes kind of gross because it's just not. It feels like this weird like mentality that somebody thinks that you could just apply to any video game, but without realizing what kind of game you're making. It's not a loot game, you know. It's not a game about like constant. It's not Diablo. You're not fighting demons. You're just like, you know, cutting trees down and picking up beets and stuff. And so it just feels like it to me. That's why, and that's like that's what I mean when it says it feels video gamey to me, because it feels like the person who made it really likes games that like let you become really powerful and keep feeding you resources, but they also like the idea of Stardew Valley. So what if you just combined them? Because it's got that like rhythm to it of like,
yeah,
you hit things three times and then it pops out and gives you six ore or whatever, and then like you have a big sword and you attack there's skeletons in the game, right? Like you're attacking, is there skeletons in Stardew? Like, you know what I mean?
There's mobs in the mines and stuff like that. Okay. They aren't really skeletons, I don't think. They're like,
there's
like
slimes too in this game.
There's slimes and like that sort of thing. It's really weird that in contrast to Stardew Valley, which has some of that aspect, you have a farm and you till it and you eventually, you know, sort of, interestingly enough, you don't ever buy a bigger farm. You don't ever expand in Stardew.
Do you get a
Valley.
Sword? Do you get a shield? Do you get?
Yeah, you get.
Do you?
Get a,
oh, okay.
You can get weapons, very limited ones, really, in Stardew Valley. Because the point is that you're not going to be down in the mines. You kind of only
it
go
sounds
in there
like that's
to like.
Not a, yeah.
It's not a huge focus of the game. I mean, you can make it if you want to. It's a little bit more open ended than that. But like with Stardew Valley versus Forager. Forager doesn't go into any detail to explain where any of the resources come from.
Who you
it's
are.
Just you.
Yeah.
Who you are. You are just a little white guy with no backstory, no connection to any other person. It's extremely lonely and terrible.
Yeah.
And Stardew Valley, for all of the criticisms you could level at it, at least contends with the idea that capitalism exists, that some people are harmed by it because there is a Walmart analog in mm-hmm. Stardew Valley, and it's like miserable and terrible, but you also get things for cheaper, and it's like at least starts to contend with the fact that like living on the land and taking things from the land has a time and a cost, and that you are connected to other people, and at least starts to have that inkling that that these people's stories and how these things come into your pockets has some sort of like cyclical nature, and that there's a cost to it.
Yeah, and there's a cost and there's like consequences to what you do.
Yeah, and that you're not unconnected to other people for good or for ill.
Yeah.
Whereas Forager's like, man, what if it would just be neat if it was just you, literally just you and what you wanted to do all the fucking time, and who cares where it comes from?
The cost is just time for you as a gamer, as a person.
It's just time. Right? It's just time. It gives you endless opportunities to remove much of the time requirements for much of the activities through what you said, automation and efficiency, which is very like you said, like Factorio.
Yeah, I haven't played that, but from what I know, you know, a lot of games like Factorio is a really popular one. It's all about just building machines, building conveyor belts, building stuff to just keep it more like keep it going efficiently. And like I know people that have restarted that game to make it more efficient because they learned how to, I don't know, like route conveyor belts better or whatever. Like there's tons of games like that that people love because it's all about just constantly just, you know, just making everything perfect and neat, which I get. Like that's the thing is like that can be satisfying. I don't think we're saying like, you know, like making things like neat or like efficient is bad, but it's when that in like the context of like a farming game, it's really weird and it's like really like it's got some big issues.
It does.
Yeah.
It does, because I mean at a certain point you're going to I feel like so much of my thoughts on this have really been modified by seeing so many people in my general sphere in games criticism really bring up the fact that like you can't just compartmentalize these things all the time, and that like I don't want to rush towards industrialization in gaming. I, you know, like even Stardew Valley doesn't really contend with the fact that like your farm is basically inherited to you from your grandfather. Well, where did he get it from?
Yeah.
Who had the land? Did these people settle on the land? Like that's a very typical thing in American history, is we just show up
just
and settle
over
the land.
It's easy. Yeah.
Take it from indigenous populations all over the world. And so even Stardew Valley doesn't contend with that 100% at all. And like, so coming into games where it really doesn't care and that people get a lot of interest out of it is like, it's really hard for me to enjoy those things, you know, like, which is funny because like, you know, even at my best moments, I'm still like a dumb white person about this stuff. And I'm still like, well, I really would like to play a little farming game. But, you know, Forager was like one of the really the first times that I sat there and I was like, this is everything that people have been talking about for like the last 2 years.
Same for me too. Even though I read all those articles, I was like, oh, I feel gross. This is weird. I don't like this. Because the thing I wrote was like, oh, I like Animal Crossing a lot now. Like, I remember, I think I like Animal Crossing extra now because I didn't realize that this game is all about this. I like the games that are just not about making everything efficient. And the one thing I remember when you were saying that, though, it's funny because Forager has a character... I think you met them because you found the treehouse, right?
Yeah.
That guy says, like, this person's going around and cutting all my trees down, and they're talking about you.
Yeah, and I was like, that was the first island I got after I bought, like, my first tiny island. That was the first NPC I interacted with, and I was like,
yeah,
oh, how is this in the game? And the person is, like, playing it as completely, like, funny as like
right
a joke.
It's supposed to just be like, oh, that guy's funny and that's
that,
it
that crazy old dude that like cares about the environment. And I was just like, oh boy. Like this is but no commentary about it. It was completely seriously. And I was just like,
right next to getting achievements for like, you know, carrying this much wood and breaking down this much mini ores, right? Or like, you know what I mean? Like there's such, you know.
Yeah, so. And it's just like, So much about this game is really weird. It's then especially complicated with the fact that, like, you get a real, like, inside look into the developer's kind of, like, life.
Yeah.
Very, as an extra, like, side bit of content that you get from, like, leveling up, basically.
Yeah.
And how it was, like, this one guy, and he did it while, like, out of a job and like running through his money, and I was just like, this is so sad on so many levels, and I hate to be like, well, you know, he doesn't deserve any success because of this game, but it does make me wonder, like, imagine your life's work being something that really doesn't interrogate a lot of things like this. Yeah. Like, it's that's just weird to me. It's weird.
It just, but, I don't know. It's hard because I don't want to, like, it's hard to be hard on, but like to be critical of it, because it's like, it in some ways it really, because I took like one, like, it was like a game theory class once, and like, I know that it's like a lot of young people, when they want to make games, they often want to make, like, you know, like a Mario style of game, you know, like pixel games, or, you know, I know that's really common, but it was like all the kids in there just really wanted to make like platformers and games that were just like just a video game, like no commentary or no like any like yeah anything to interrogate anything happening within them, which is what we see get, you know, like that like happens in giant games now too, right? Like the Division or whatever, right? So
yeah,
it just worries me because it feels almost like it feels almost juvenile in a way, like, because it just feels like, oh, this is clearly your first game, but you, I don't know. Like, you
sunk all of your life's money into it.
But that, like, I don't know if that's too harsh, because I realize that, like, you got to make something to learn, right? But like, I don't know. It's just like, geez, like, you can't just make Mario. You can't just make the pixel like farmer game that you thought sounded cool. Like, you should be doing, I don't know. I feel like you should be doing more than just making this. I don't know.
It's 2019. Yeah. And I guess I'm gonna be an asshole about this, but like, If you're a white guy in games, more so than anybody else, I don't think anybody is free of this 100%. But like, if you're a white guy making indie games,
I don't think he is, right?
Oh, okay.
Is he not? I'm not sure. I thought there was something in that story that suggested he wasn't, but I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you.
Basically,
I think your thing is going to be true, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. Maybe it's not true, whatever. But if you're making video games and you're not engaging with critical writing about video games, I just don't understand that. And I, as a critic, I think my job is to look at even small games made by small people and maybe not put it on as much scrutiny as, like, say, Ubisoft, that can dump millions of dollars into it. Okay, yeah, it's not the same scope in terms of, like, reach or whatever. Forager doesn't have the huge audience that, like, an Ubisoft or a, you know, like, a Rockstar game does. 100%, totally understand that. But on the other hand, I think Forager is indicative of a larger issue in games taken to a very crystallized degree. And I think it behooves us as critics to constantly be bringing that up, because video game creators need to be thinking about this stuff when they make video games. That's how stuff actually changes. It's a structural problem in video games that we keep making games that focus on a group of people coming into a land and just strip mining it for resources as, like, a basic fundamental thing in the game that you're supposed to do, and not grappling with that at all, when indie games really could grapple with that more and really have something to say about that, or maybe, you know, not use that at all. And it just never happens. It keeps not happening.
Yeah.
You know? And it's hard to ignore it, especially now when we're seeing the effects of wide-scale global, you know, global capitalism destroying everything, and has been for years since the dawn of you know, industrialization, that was on the back of colonizing everywhere. Like, I don't know, like, it's just, it's wild to me that this little game about this just like little like white blobby person is making all these things come to surface. But it's like, it really hit home for me, all of those conversations that we've been reading on the internet for, you know, the last couple of years. It really slapped me in the face after a while, which is funny, I guess. It's hard to ignore it even more now. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the role of critics in video games is so important, because it's media that's being put out there. And having those conversations definitely woke me up to that sort of thing being so basic in every video game and what it really means, you know? And it's funny because, like, I wanted to keep playing Forager, you know, because I like chill out games. I like games that just kind of give me that, like, churn and, you know, just kind of mindless sort of stuff. But I felt overwhelmed by just how many resources were there to, for me to just pick up and grind and put together and streamline. And I don't want to deal with mechanized stuff. I don't want to build a factory. I don't want to make robots. I hate that shit so much. I just want to have a cute little farm. And then I realized, you know, like, the stuff's going to keep growing no matter what I do. And wouldn't the, like, I even had this, like, thing of, like, well, maybe I can, like, play with this and grapple with this and sort of, like, subvert what the game is trying to do.
Yeah.
By, so what I started doing is I started leaving, like, I started basically, like, curating the, like, islands around me to basically just be taken up with, like, certain kinds of spawns. So I would just, like, let the trees grow over and then just don't go back to that island. Just let it be a forest. And even part of that felt really shitty to me, because then I was like, well, isn't that just me building a like, curated, you know, forest or farm or something? It's just you know, the whole thing, the best way to subvert Forager's ideas is to just let everything grow over and then never play it again.
Yeah.
And that sucks, because it's like, that's, you know, like, if the point of, like, trying to really resist the game is to not play the game at all, I'm like, yeah, I mean, gotta just not play this game.
Yeah, just to go back earlier, I looked up the developer guy. His name is Mariano Cavallero, I think, and the Hot Frog is the name of the, like, developer, and he's, like, Argentinian, I guess?
Okay.
So, and that's where they're based at, so I don't know, but I still think everything you said was true, regardless of, like, this game in particular,
I don't know the particular
politics
of...
I don't either.
I don't know the particular politics of Argentinian farming and things like that, and I know that that's, like, a big culture in Argentina, as far as I know, but, like,
Yeah, but I mean, we still see tons of people making games that are from here, North America or something, right?
Yeah, that don't contend with that.
Yeah. So, and it still feels weird, you know, regardless of, I guess, who made it sometimes, because it's still just a weird concept. And even if it, and that's the thing, is, like, I just don't think it, even if, let's say, there was something maybe interesting with that, like, with Argentinian, like, farming, I guess, it just feels like it still feels like the message here is to just clear out the land, just clear it out and just do as efficiently as possible, which doesn't seem good regardless of where you're at, it seems. I don't know.
If you're making a farming simulator that has no essential conversation with itself in the work as to where that land comes from, or who quote-unquote owns it, or how these things are having an impact on the environment, I just don't know what you're doing. I don't know. And it's not a question I can easily solve for developers as a critic. I can kind of only point out, like, what that conversation is, but I don't know what to tell developers, you know, what, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. farming simulators. Inherently problematic. Real complicated.
Yeah, and I like I just think that it's totally possible to make a really small game that isn't going to like be huge in scope that also does say something, you know?
Yeah.
It's but not
you have
impossible.
To think about it. Yeah. You have to actually contend with that idea in the first place, which may end up being that you just don't make a farming sim game.
Yeah.
Basically.
I just want to be careful when I was saying earlier because I just, you know, I like I said, I know that people are like just getting into game design. It's like I'm not a game designer. I know it's not easy to just make a game. So I realize that, you know, you might make like little prototypes and stuff that are stupid, but I don't know. If you're making a big game like this, I feel like you should think about what you're saying with it.
If you're taking it to market and you're taking it to the public, it's something that you should be thinking about. What you put out into the world, you know, we make a podcast. We have to stand behind what the things we say, you know, and if we make a mistake or we don't really think something through about what we're talking about, which is always possible, we're speaking very extemporaneously and we're speaking from very particular positions on
things.
We both
just didn't know who made the games, as you saw, so...
I hadn't, like, I kind of had an idea, but, like,
I feel like that, I thought there was a line in that, like, little post, that little, like, extra that said something about, like, not living in, like, America or something like that.
So I thought he was like, French, if I'm being completely
I thought
honest.
Something like that, too, but I just wanted to look it up to make sure. It was hard to find, actually, so it's not very, he's not super public, I don't think.
So.
But anyway, like... I mean, Forager, it's not a very good game. It's weird to say that. I spent like 20 hours playing it, but not 20, probably more like 10 because I left it on.
Yeah, I got around 5, I think, and then I just stopped, which was like kind of sucky because, you know, I do want other games that are going to hold my attention that aren't Overwatch at this point. And it's really interesting to me because we also started playing a game called Sea of Thieves, which is about piracy and like, it's got that like fantasy pirate thing, and yet the first quest and stuff that we go on is like, oh, you're gonna sail to all these abandoned islands where you pick up totems and you look for wall paintings, and I'm just like, oh wow, this really is in like every single game that I mean like I knew that on some level 100%, but man, like, we just, you know,
loot
random people who just vanished off the land and they're just not there anymore. That's so crazy.
The world is yours forever.
The world is empty, yours forever.
This is just why Dark Souls is the best game. That's all I'm saying over and over again. The world is not yours in Dark Souls.
Oh, and that everybody outside of the wall is just doomed to die.
The games that just make you think about like, what did I just did I take something from somebody? Did somebody live here? Like just for a moment, because that's what Dark Souls does. Another game, it's not just Dark Souls. I mean, a lot of other games do too, but. Yeah. I just, even if it's just as, even if it's not like a major theme, it's just having that little twist on just like, wait, what are you doing actually? I don't know.
Yeah. I really kind of want to make a point to bring up DLSina's work as kind of being fundamental to a lot of my thoughts on this sort of stuff, because she writes about this stuff and tweets about this stuff literally all the time, as well as like amplifies other indigenous writers on this sort of stuff from all over the world, because you know indigenous people are not just from North America, but like it's become so apparent to me in the last like couple of years because of that. Like, it's just, you know, I do want to just play a fun timey game about piracy. But it's so hard when even the first thing you come up against is like, oh, there's these ancient writings of these people, but they're not here anymore. That's just so weird. But just take all their stuff. Be like, you know, like, what? Okay, cool.
And sell it to get money.
To buy
a better ship.
Buy a better ship so that you can. Yeah, I know.
I feel so stupid because like before like reading a lot of like Dia stuff, I really didn't think about it as critically. I never really thought. I've played a million of these games,
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. 100%.
Like, I think it's one of those things that there's definitely, like, a growing, like, discourse slash people just understanding that, like, the systems in games are constantly saying something, which is, I know that's not new for, like, game theory people or, like, people, like, academics, yeah. But I think it's, like, a broader understanding of just, like, no, like, the every Dragon Age game, you do the same thing if you actually look at what you're like, mechanically doing, and so I think a lot of people just don't, including myself for a long time, didn't 100% understand what you're doing. And yeah, it's in like so many games, even in Diablo, which I mentioned earlier, you know. So
yeah, and the thing is that I think that's been the most interesting thing about the last couple of years of games criticism is I remember when I started writing about feminist stuff in World of Warcraft in 2010, and so many people said, and this is 101 level stuff. I'm not talking about like about the, like, you know, let's talk about the real role of you know, gender discomfort in we're talking about basic stuff like titty physics, bad costumes, sexist things, like, you know, like having, you know, like having a character in a game call another a woman character a bitch, like that sort of stuff,
the and trolls.
Getting called, like, yeah, like, oh yeah, yeah. Like basic criticism of a giant MMO that's made by a huge corporation.
People
would call me like a firebrand and a revolutionary because of that shit, and I'm just like, and now we're just starting to get to a point, like almost 10 years later, where that's just part of the understood conversation
right.
Like, that's accepted now.
People thought Shadow of the Colossus was, like, amazing because it actually said something about killing these giant things that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't play that game, but, and I guess spoilers, but, like, I know that people thought that was, like, amazing because it made you think about the things you were killing as, like, these, like, beasts or whatever that, you know, that are not doing anything mean. You're just killing them, so.
Yeah. But then we also have things like, well, now we have games where, like, Nier Automata that has, like, an actual boss that's based on Simone de Beauvoir's work. And people think like, don't get me started about that.
The other thing, I remember, actually, this is my 101 thing with WoW. I remember playing World of Warcraft and being like, gosh, you really just kill all the animals in this game. Like, I always thought that was weird. I'm like, geez, like, all you really do is just, like, go through these different areas and just murder all the wildlife constantly.
Yeah.
That's all you do is you just kill boars. And I mean, like, sometimes it's, like, evil spiders and demons, but often it's just, like, kill a lot of birds and get their feathers.
I just think it's funny that we're just getting to the point in games where you don't have to keep reiterating. I mean, there's definitely times when we keep having to do this, but, like, the fact that you just say something is racist or sexist at least is, like, where that conversation is starting from versus, like, so many people, like, just arguing with the fact that you can't even say racist or sexist. I mean, they'll still fight you about it all the fucking time because that's just how racism and sexism is with, like, people. But the fact that we can at least have a little bit of a conversation beyond that now, like, 10, 15 years later is, like, hopeful in some ways. But, yeah, it's just funny to me, I guess. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Games
Forager was really interesting just because, like you said, it was just one of those games where it's, like, I was playing it and I'm just, like, I couldn't get my mind off of, like, gosh, this is really gross and weird, and
it's
I don't
really
feel okay,
like,
playing this.
Exactly. Like,
I haven't had that feeling a lot, really. Like, and usually it's like, I don't feel okay playing this because, like, the game's, like, you're bad, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, in the fiction that, like, wink, wink, you're doing a bad thing. But this game, it's like, oh, I can see what's happening here, and I don't like it.
I always have to make that bargain with myself or that concession with myself of, like, typically with, like, gender stuff, like,
it's usually smaller
how much am I gonna have to concede to this game being sexist or anti-woman, you know, in some capacity before I stop playing it?
That's the kind of thing that I feel like I've, like, gotten used to. It's like, oh, that's not good.
That sucks, but I'm just going to put that over there.
I mean, we play Overwatch. It's got tons of issues, you know?
It's got tons of shit going on in Overwatch.
Yeah.
And you have to make... Yeah.
I don't know if we're laughing about the same thing. I just thought it was just really funny that, I don't know, that we're just like, Overwatch is some really bad stuff today on May
19th, 2019. At 3:59 in the afternoon. Well, about Overwatch. So, actually, I think that maybe we should just talk about that.
Yeah, I'm fine with it if you want.
Okay, so...
This is unplanned. This is not on our notes. This is exclusive.
We were going to talk about Detective Pikachu, which is a fine, wonderful movie, but you know what? Overwatch decided to do a thing today.
Yeah. Exist again.
Exist again. And so I get out of Detective Pikachu today, and I am with my friends, and we are going to the fine Taco Bell establishment to eat lunch. And I say, you know, oh, Tyler, I'll be home soon to record the podcast. And he's like, oh, the diva skin is out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
We should probably explain why.
Yeah, so Jeff Kaplan, in an interview, I think, with like a streamer or something, he said, like, in the anniversary event, which is like the game's anniversary, they do a bunch of new skins. He was like, there's going to be a D.Va skin that will, like, quote, break the internet. And so Apple and I talked about it because, you know, given Overwatch's history with some racist skins, we were just considering, like, geez, I wonder what they're going to do with this Korean, like, gamer character in terms of a skin. Yeah, yeah, gamer. 19-year-old. Yeah, girl.
Year old.
Yeah.
19
that
years
will break
old.
The internet. And we were like, gosh, what if it's, like, actually a good skin and, like, a K-pop skin? Because she is, like, a K-pop star, isn't she? Like, that's part
She's
of it,
She's got,
right?
Yeah. Like, that kind of notoriety. They've given her a little bit more of context for, like, what she does in Korea because, like, her and her, like, esports gamer squad help kill, you know, evil Omnics that are trying to attack Busan. But, like, she, you know, comes from the history of, like, being a gamer, a top competitive StarCraft player, although they retconned that.
Yeah.
And she's a child prodigy, and she fights in a mech, which is interesting because that is... That feels like that comes from the Overwatch writers initially... really just being into Evangelion and mech anime.
Yeah, she
which is
looks
Japan.
Like it. You've never seen D.Va. She just looks like she's from Evangelion.
She looks very similar to Asuka if Asuka was like had like brunette hair.
Yeah.
And like but that frame, that kind of frame. Well, instead of Japanese. And well no, Asuka in
I was going to say what is Asuka cuz I don't
In
know.
Asuka is she's German?
Is she German? Okay.
Asuka Langley is...
I've never seen Evangelion. Plan to watch it soon, but...
Yeah, that's going to be a trip. Asuka is... Because I know that she might not be a... I think she's one of the characters who isn't from Japan. But I don't know 100%. Because it's very...
It's interesting just because, while you're like looking that up, if you are,
yeah.
Is they did give her, D.Va, an Asuka skin in Heroes of the Storm, Blizzard's other game, their MOBA. And so they've like they've tied the two together. Like, they've acknowledged that there's an inspiration there, at least to me. Like, it looks like, oh yeah, she has a mech. She's like a, you know, like a pilot essentially of this mech. So like, let's make her into this character that people like, or basically. So we usually end up talking about like new skins coming out, obviously because we just play the game. But we usually also like, gosh, what? How could they make this one racist or bad? Because they tend to do that. And so I think we talked a lot about like what this skin could potentially be, especially since we both play D.Va and we there's a lot of ideas that we really like, but there's also ideas like, oh geez, they really could do that.
Because every time Overwatch decides to do something, it inevitably becomes problematic really quickly, especially with their like big show-offy skins. Like, they have a hit, by the way. Asuka, her full name is Asuka Langley Soryu, and she is a quarter Japanese. Only a quarter Japanese, which accounts for her Japanese name but European appearance, and she is a native of Germany, having been raised there, although her nationality is technically American.
Huh. I don't know anything about Evangelion, so none of this makes any sense to me, really, but okay, sure.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it takes place, so.
So she is American, but lives in Germany, which suggests, we're not going to go into it, because it's Evangelion, you'll find out, but yeah. Like,
Okay.
Yeah, so, we're basically, every time we talk about Overwatch and sort of prognosticate about stuff, we always hope for the best, but always expect the absolute worst.
Yeah.
Which is, tends to be true. And in this case, we were like, yeah, it would be great if she got like a K-pop idol skin, because like she's definitely a bit of an idol in Busan, yeah. Even though she's like a mech pilot. But it's really interesting because this mech pilot, like you said, the mech pilot thing has been very much winked at this entire time, despite the fact that, like, that is, you know, predominantly Japanese concept in their media. She's Korean. Those are two different countries.
Different, not just the same people.
Yeah, like, Blizzard. Those are two very different countries and cultures. Blizzard. And, you know, but we also thought of, like, God, 19-year-old girl. God, I hope it's not, like, a Playboy bunny skin or, like, bad. That would be horrible. Horrifying. Yeah. And like, you know, she's always been a product of Blizzard's like imagination when it comes to like, well, what kind of like young nubile girl would I would like to date when I'm like, when I was like 19 years old.
I mean, we saw that
old.
In the short in a way with the dude.
Yeah,
I feel like he was there to be that like audience thing, right? To me, like,
an audience stand-in a little bit. Yeah, yeah. In some ways. But she's like clearly, you know, like I mean, you could also talk about like something like Genji, who also is a very weird concept. Cyber ninja sounds like something that you know, like a 15-year-old kid would come up with. But like, D.Va is like she's a competitive gamer. And she's super fashionable, and she's super cute, and she's very girly, and all of these things. And it's like, so she's the ultimate nerd girl, and she has, you know, because of who a lot of the gaming fan base is, I've seen some, like, absolutely stomach-turning things on the internet as it relates to D.Va, and I'm not going to talk about it here.
I think I actually was looking up because I wanted to know because I was looking up like the Kotaku story. This is weird, but about like the Overwatch porn, because I was like, I wonder what like they said about the D.Va stuff. And I also noticed that like it was like out of the Overwatch heroes, she was the second most searched on Pornhub.
Oh, D.Va, absolutely.
Yes. Which I mean, it's not surprising, but it was just like, you know, for some context, people do a lot with D.Va. So
they do, because as a whole, a lot of people are obsessed with young teen girls, and she's not illegal. She's 19. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
And and you know, it's really interesting that a lot of the skin concepts that they've given her have been very like costume oriented, like, you know, the cruiser skin, which is also I still don't like that. But they put her like, they make her like cute little girl cop or cute little black cat Lolita, gothic Lolita outfit, which is also, again, very weird because her thing is a bunny, and also gothic Lolita dress is Japanese. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there's EGL Korean girls, obviously, but like it's a something that came up predominantly in Japanese culture. And it just feels like so much about this character is a mishmash of things that really have nothing to do with her being Korean and more of her just being a generic Asian nerd girl, which is like a problem, a big problem. And also the fact that like they haven't like made her super sexualized, thank freaking God, but like you can, you know how the fan base is going to take that. I've always felt this about her from the moment she was introduced in, like, the beta, basically. Yeah. Because I know how gamer dudes are about teen girl characters. And the fact that you're, like, constantly putting her in these, like, costumes where that's reinforced. It's also hard for me not to take this really seriously, too, because I did a huge reported piece for Kotaku.
Yeah, that's the thing I think about all the time. With
So a lot of the Overwatch community in the South Korean competitive scene is extremely deeply misogynistic and sexist.
Like puns are created off of her name to like describe like what they're doing when they're like, you know, staggering her, like keeping her alive to like delay her respawn kind of thing. Like, yeah, that's like a thing that's just on, it's only to D.Va. Like, I don't know.
There's a portmanteau that gamers in Korea, South Korea, have come up with that is a portmanteau of mercy and the word cunt. Yeah. There is, like you said, there is a...
Yeah, I guess portmanteau is more correct. Yeah,
there's an idiot, like there's a slang phrase that basically instead of, so when we say, you know, when D.Va's popped out of mech, basically, we say that in English, their way of phrasing, you know, kill D.Va or get D.Va out of mech is basically, there's a slang term that basically, you know, like, it's a phrase that's very similar to like sexual harassment, basically.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And there's videos that a bunch of like gamer dudes made, and this is something that I had to like research as part of the article because it was brought up by one of the women I was interviewing. So, for one of the events, which was the Lunar New Year's event, which is very, very Chinese and Chinese and Korean culture focused, in terms of like, you know, the costumes and the cultural stuff. D.Va got this really cute skin that was called the Palanquin skin that gave her a like sort of abbreviated hanbok outfit. So not the full length of hanbok, which typically goes down to like ankles as far as I can tell, but like is a lot shorter. And they gave her like little like pedal pusher, you know, shorts underneath. There were videos made by South Korean, you know, competitive gamer streamers that would basically be like trying to kill the little D.Va out of the mech so they could like look up her skirt of the character, and they would make jokes about it and film it. And like, I had to watch videos of this, and even though I can't speak Korean, you can absolutely tell what is happening in the video because it's like a Genji, you know, the one I watched in particular was a Genji player killing a baby D.Va and then like ragdolling her body for the like one moment that the skirt would flip up and show off her shorts.
People do that with like the Witch Mercy skin and stuff like that too.
Like they're video game characters and they're not explicit and they have like pants or little like panties under their skirts, so you're not seeing anything. But the gesture, the thing that's being hinted at there is like this sexual violence or that's funny or that harassing female characters, not even the players, although that is a part of it too. It's part of this whole thing. And so when I see them give D.Va another weird anime homage skin that also hyper emphasizes her age and her youthfulness to even younger than 19, doesn't matter if it's an homage to like mech anime, I'm still bugged by it because of all of this. It can't not be in my brain.
Yeah. Did we really explain what the skin is?
Oh, no, we didn't. Good job, us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to explain what it
is? I mean, it's basically just like, it's called Academy D.Va. I almost said Academia or whatever. I don't know why I said that. Anyway.
My Academy Hero Academia.
D.Va. Yeah. Well, because they also just did League skins that are like Battle Academia, whatever. Skins, which is funny. She's in like a schoolgirl outfit and her mech is like a Gundam inspired looking thing because it's got the like, I don't know what you call this, like the fins or whatever, the very Gundam like white like pointy fins on it and stuff, you know. And it's got like the head with like the what would you call that, almost like a chevron shaped thing on it.
The accoutrements of like
the
very classic like Gundam looking sort of thing.
So it looks like a Gundam, but I don't know much about Gundam. but she's in a schoolgirl outfit, just straight up, that like tennis shoes, whatever, like skirt, right? Like that's just that's
uniform jacket, yeah. Like uniform jacket, tie, plaid skirt.
Yeah.
Very much like the idea of like it's kind of an interesting mishmash between what we would think as a private school outfit here in America, but yeah. Also it looks very reminiscent of some of the private like school uniforms in right. like Japan and Korea yeah. too as well. So it's which is again consistent with mech anime and a lot of like school anime of like, you know, like focusing on high school and always with these like really, you know, kind of zany situations of like, oh, they're high school students, but they also have to save the world in their giant robots, or they're mm-hmm. high school students, but it's in space and they have to pilot spaceships
yeah.
and save the world. And that feels like, again, sort of the lineage that D.Va herself comes from, but it's like, maybe that was the problem all along, you know? And mm-hmm. I thought that with them further fleshing out that D.Va is part of this like weird gamer esports mech squad, that maybe they would sort of draw more on like this idea that they are like a part of like South Korea and that they're defenders of, you know, right. that culture and that sort of thing. And that, and because esports is a huge thing in South Korea, that
yeah.
is a thing, you know, like the fact that she did come from like the StarCraft II.
Well, in the short wasn't just playing up like she's a gamer girl and she's cute. It mm-hmm. was like, no, there's more going on. We did write something for this character.
She believes in sacrificing herself to the detriment of her body and her yeah. mind, which again yeah. is also a prevalent thing in like a lot of mech animes. But it also made it really kind of that she's just not a cute gamer girl, as like all of the other things in the game have really suggested, is that she really kind of honors a deep commitment to protecting, you know, the world, and that she takes on that stress. And again, this is going to be so funny when you watch Evangelion. like she takes on this weight and this responsibility, and that she is a serious person, that she is a serious character that does have like thoughts and feelings and motivations. And so I thought it would be really interesting if they would just keep going in that direction, but then it just feels like, well, no, we're just going to make her look even younger.
Yeah.
And give her a cool mech. Cool.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks.
Broke the internet. Yeah. It's just such a basic take that just, I don't know. It's just, it's not surprising for Blizzard, I guess, but geez, is it still the same? It's still got its issues and still like, ugh, I don't know. Like, there's so many other options they could have done. Even the one that's in Heroes of the Storm, the Destroyer D.Va skin. Like, they could have done anything that was, like, more interesting instead of just doing the school. Like, I don't know. I kind of had hoped that we would never get a schoolgirl thing for D.Va, right? You know?
Because, like we were talking about earlier, yeah, this was 100% one of the ideas that we came up with
yeah.
earlier.
I'm pretty sure people have probably concepted it like as a fan concept, you know? Like I'm sure yeah. people have done that, but
yeah.
Yeah. It's just I don't know. It's like it's just not even the it's not D.Va. I just don't I guess not all skins are representative of the character always, but
no, cuz I mean they've yeah. done like fantastical things before, but like it's still like I think you just don't see this happening in quite the same way with the male characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, like, I thought Sentai Genji was, like, a really good skin. It's representative of, like, cool Japanese television shows. It fits with his silhouette. It's a cool skin that people are gonna nerd out about. And, but, you know, Genji's also, like, a cyber ninja from Japan, but he's also not a 19-year-old girl, and the world treats 19-year-old yeah. girls very differently than a, you know, 30-something-year-old guy. You know, like, it just, that's
kind they of just weird. they could have just done anything else to avoid, to fight back against that, like, I don't know, the way people depict D.Va in their own ways, usually. Like, I just feel like it just, like, it feels like they just really just uncritically just bought into something that already happens and is bad, even outside of Overwatch, like you just said, like, you know, the way yeah. we treat like young girls. So it's just like, it's just really sad that they just didn't think about it at all. It feels like they just had no, they just did the thing. They just did the thing that everybody does often. And I don't know.
Which is so funny because they've managed it with D.Va before. Like, I thought the Wave Racer skin was cute and didn't infantilize her and wasn't just Palantine's weird. It was good just
too. Like,
yeah. People are gross, but that was a good skin too.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
It's just, I don't know.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. Yeah.
It's just especially disappointing in a way because it's like we're not super into the game at the moment. We're like disappointed in the way it's gone. And then just to see that even the cosmetic part about it, which is usually the part that I think we still like a bit, right? Because it's like, you know, it's still the same. Like, I know it's not new. They've done this stuff before, but it's just like, oh, we're just going to keep doing the skins like this, I guess. We're not going to actually like be interesting with them.
They also didn't really put, she has like a piece of Korean, like a bunch of Korean characters on the back of her mech.
Yeah.
That don't really make sense in Korean.
Yeah. They're not, it's like a word like put together that's not a word.
Yeah. Or it's a like verdictor
or something like that or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Nice.
Nice.
Really great job. Yeah.
There's no one at Blizzard, considering the fact that they have Korean offices.
They totally do, yeah.
That could have helped on... I don't know. I don't know what happened.
They have Korean, like, translators in Overwatch League. They couldn't call them up? I don't know. Like, jeez. That's just... Oh, gosh. Bad.
So bad. Everything's terrible.
This is the first skin they revealed for this upcoming event too, which is on Tuesday. So
I still think we're also kind of let in on what other things we were prognosticating. We were just we're still not out of the woods with like a Halloween skin for Baptiste that's going to be completely racist. So we're not out of the woods on this one too either. So anyway, video games still terrible.
We have not had like a positive episode about Overwatch for so long.
I know.
I'm not mad about that, or I don't regret it or anything. I just think it's just interesting in its own way. It is interesting. I don't know. Yeah.
People are gonna get sick of us. But, you know, I got called a Blizzard stan the other day, so that was interesting.
You are, yeah.
I know. I'm the biggest Blizzard fan. All Blizzard games are equally great and wonderful, and I love them to death.
Podcast, you just won't be quiet about Hearthstone. It's like, okay, great. Your deck is good. That's great. But you're a mage. Okay, congratulations.
Blizzard makes the best games, and it's the best company, and I love them to death, and I will defend them to my dying breath, and other things I will never fucking say in my life. So, anyway, I think that's probably been our show for this week.
Detective Pikachu is terrible. Cute. Also, I remembered something, and I'm glad I remembered it now. Does that mean that you saw the Sonic trailer?
Yes. Yeah.
It's good, that's right? It's really good.
You know what? For all the amount of Sonic games that I have played, that could be right. That could be accurate. I don't even know at this point.
It's so stupid. Gosh, it's so bad. It's not even like, I'm not even going to do the like cliche, like it's so bad, it's good. It's just so bad that it's just like I just want to watch it keep going. I don't know. It's just like, oh man, this looks awful. Like some, like, they just did this one. They made this one.
The teeth.
Yeah, the teeth are bad. Yeah, the song choice really bad. Not a good one.
I don't understand. Bad cover about it.
Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense at all. Jim Carrey looks like he's having fun, but that's about it.
I don't understand anything about Hollywood anymore.
Yeah. I don't even know anything about Sonic either. Like, I've played like one Sonic game, but geez, this movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie. So, anyway, I just wanted to know that you've seen that, and I'm happy now. You had no choice. That's the best part.
I know. It was the worst. I hate it. I was doing so well avoiding it.
Yeah, because you didn't. Because I thought you went to go watch it because everybody was talking about it, and you know, I knowing you, you would have just went and watched it. It's a trailer.
I love trailers. Yeah. I love trailers.
Yeah. So I was like, she's gonna. She had seen it, I'm sure. But you're like, no, I'm not watching it. I'm like, wow, okay.
I'm not watching it. Yeah. I'm not. And like, and then I had to.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
It always gets you.
It does. It really does. And that teeth. Those teeth. Oh,
the teeth, God. Yeah.
The teeth. No! Don't do that teeth noise! We're ending this podcast.
ASMR, let's go.
Forever. No! We're done. We're done. I'm done. Anyway, Tyler, where can we find you on the internet? Although I'm not sure anyone.
Just imagine like a dark room and his eyes open up and then his teeth, his white glaring teeth are the only thing you see, the eyes and the teeth.
No, let's go full Corinthian. What if his eyes were teeth?
Somebody's done that. That's a Photoshop.
No, I know they
have.
Yeah. Anyway.
Me on the internet, if you really want to find me there, I'm on Twitter, at Tyler Culp, TylerColp. I write for BlizzardWatch.com all the time, and I also stream for Blizzard Watch, which is twitch.tv/BlizzardWatch.
Yep, and you can find me at Apple Cider Witch. Also, I do stream for Blizzard Watch as well, where we've been doing Dark Souls, and that's been a lot of fun. Also, I think we're going to be linking to your Forager story in the show notes well. Yeah. So that'll be cool. And if you like the show and you want to keep up with the show, our show also has a Twitter, which is MISFcast on Twitter. And also, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can send it to us on Twitter or at our email, which is makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. Also, if you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes as well. And, you know, tell your friends. Maybe they like teeth noises.
Yeah. Do you think he brushes his teeth?
I don't know. I don't care.
Man, if you eat enough chili dogs, you got to brush your teeth, you know?
Does he eat a lot of chili
dogs? Yeah, that's like
his
thing. His favorite food is chili dogs.
Why would a hedgehog eat chili dogs?
I don't know. It's Sonic. He doesn't make any sense.
Sonic
was never good.
I don't. What? Hot take. Anyways, tell your friends maybe about our podcast. Also,
yeah,
our intro.
Or to avoid it. I don't know.
Also, our intro and outro music is done by Maddie Myers, and you can find everything she does at MiddieMyers.net. That's MiddieMyers.net or Maddie Myers on Twitter.
She's not going to want her name on this one.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Time. Bye.